some northern regions are starting to get a bit of heat relief now. A 6.8 earthquake is blamed for hundreds of deaths in Morocco. That is in North Africa. Here's the BBC's Abigail Wardsley.
The epicenter of the earthquake was in the Atlas Mountains, where many settlements are remote and hard to access. The nearest major city was Marrakesh, where frightened people rushed outside as the quake struck. Residents told the Reuters news agency that some buildings had collapsed in the city, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Back here, New Mexico's Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham puts out an emergency public order suspending open and concealed carry of guns in Albuquerque for 30 days. That in the midst of a wave of gun violence. KRQE-TV's Gabe Chavez.
The governor says anyone caught breaking the order will fall under a civil violation connected to her public health order. The governor says she doesn't expect criminals to follow the order, but she hopes it's, quote, a resounding message to everyone else in the community to report gun crime.
The point here is that if everyone did it and I wasn't legally challenged, you would have fewer risks on the street. And I could safely say to every New Mexican, and particularly those folks living in Albuquerque and Bernalillo County, I believe that you're safer for the next 30 days. We'll have to wait and see.
A former Philadelphia police officer is formally charged in a fatal police shooting. Ex-officer Mark Dial accused of murder for fatally shooting Eddie Irizarry during a traffic stop.
It's unclear what Dial's partner says leading up to the shots being fired. The audio on his body-worn camera doesn't switch on until after the shooting stops. But that audio reveals him looking for something in Irizarry's car.
Where's the scene?
Officers are then seen carrying a limp and bloody Irizarry to the police cruiser.
Reporter Dan Snyder of CBS News Philadelphia, and this is CBS News.
When you think of hiring, think of Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com.
So, have you done sports?
Yes.
What about weather?
Done that.
I've got it. The moon.
Hey, everybody. You're listening to James Help Seth Pick the Next Theme for this week's Seth Faces the Music. It's on Sundays from 6 to 8 p.m. on locally grown radio, WFHR. The problem is, he's done so many shows already, it's getting tough to find the next group of songs. Don't worry, though. It'll be fine.
Yeah, all right. You got me. I give up.
That's it. The theme for the next Seth Faces the Music will be...
Kids across America are going to school hungry. Millions of kids every day. Hungry kids get sick more often and can struggle in school. It can be harder for them to focus and learn. But one simple thing can help change all of this for a hungry child in America. Good healthy food and the energy it brings. With help from caring people across America, No Kid Hungry is providing healthy meals and hope to hungry kids so they can build better futures.
We want to ensure that all of our kids have healthy meals every day.
Thank you.
Thank you for helping feed our kids.
To learn more about ending child hunger in America, go to helpnokidhungry.org today.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Partly cloudy skies overnight with lows around 47. Easterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Highs around 78. Tomorrow, mainly clear. Chance for scattered thunderstorms. Tomorrow night, 56. Chance for scattered storms. Sunday, chance for scattered rain showers on Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Fujitsky. Currently, it's 49.
From the home of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news, talk, and sports station.
Flatbread, unless there's goat cheese on it. Pine nuts.
Wow, someone went to private school. They knocked down the original building, which was just a building, and then they built an actual castle, and it is gorgeous. Every time a friend of mine from out of town comes, I take him there because I'm that much of a podunk hick.
Magic people, voodoo people. Ooh, I like this one.
This is the Prodigy.
The Prodigy. Okay. Yep. Jane, what do you how do you rate this one?
Oh, I'm having a ball.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada yada yada.
Welcome to the 11 o'clock hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry, along with Greg Bach on the board. And I am recording live from Madison today, my hometown. Always fun to be here in the Civic Media headquarters. And what I noticed as I was driving to the studio this morning from the west side, driving down to State Street through campus, is that the kids are back. And so lots of kids walk, I shouldn't call them kids, young adults, students, UW-Madison students walk in, going to class, they're here, and it made me think, you know, it's always been fun when growing up in Madison and having all the students be back, but it also was topical for our talk today with our next guest, because last month, I read an article from Washington Post that had this headline, "Professors have a summer assignment, prevent ChatGPT chaos in the fall." And I was curious to talk to someone who is not only just a professor, but also knows a thing or two about AI and the ethics behind it. And so I'm so excited to talk to our next guest, Professor David Williamson Schaefer, who is a data philosopher, a quantitative ethnographer, and the Sears Bascom Professor of Learning Analytics and Educational Psychology at UW-Madison's School of Education. So I feel like you are poised to be an expert on the ethics of ChatGPT and how it's being used in college.
Well, I'm happy to pretend to be an expert anyway.
There we go. So I guess the first question is, I think just blatantly, is that headline accurate? Was there kind of a feeling over the summer of this is going to be a school year where it's the Wild West of how students are using generative AI?
Yeah, I think actually the term Wild West is kind of perfect. For those of us old enough to remember, say, when the internet first came out and the World Wide Web in the early 1990s, or video games started to be a big thing in the late 2000s. Yeah, nobody's quite sure exactly what it is that they should be doing. And so there's a lot of experimentation and a lot of worry. And I think also in some places, a lot of excitement.
So is it, at least in your experience with UW-Madison, has there been much instruction or guidance given from an administration level of like, this is how we are deciding to do this? Or is it kind of each professor deciding how they want to monitor it, use it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not aware that we've received a whole lot of specific guidance. There are definitely universities that have been much more centralized in the way that they're thinking about how to respond to AI. But UW-Madison, I think, has a long and strong tradition of independence and broad thinking. And so there hasn't really been a central mandate yet. And I think the same thing is true, at least for the schools in Madison. And as far as I know, the schools across the state, there's really been no kind of central guidance about what to do or not to do.
Which is funny, because I feel like that's kind of been how where we are with government, as far as what are we doing with AI? What are we doing ahead of the election? And there's been lots of talk of we should do something. We should start to figure out the rules and how we play with this. But no one's really taken the first step to, I guess, draft what that looks like, at least that I'm aware of.
Yeah, well, I think part of it is that where people are still experimenting to find out what AI can and can't do. And I think we're even still at the stage where not everybody's sure what we actually mean by AI or yeah, what's new or why it is that we're talking so much about it.
So for your experience, what are the risks of students, like, I guess, what's the useful way students could be using generative AI that enhances work versus replaces work? Because I think that's the fear, yeah, right? It becomes you just use ChatGPT to write a paper or to do your work for you. And is that a legitimate fear, or is it more stuff that could be a starting place for students?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, one thing that's really important is to understand what we're talking about when we talk about ChatGPT. So ChatGPT is what's called a large language model. And literally what that means is that a company, in this case, OpenAI, has spent a ton of money scraping everything it can, legally or not, from the internet, and then using that to construct a giant database that tells it given some set of words, what's the next most likely word to come? So it's literally just, if you think about autocomplete, when you type in like in Gmail or on, sometimes in Word, right? It's just doing that on a massive scale. It's just, it's like a giant autocomplete engine. And the way I think about it is it's sort of like when you ask it questions, it's sort of like an undergraduate who skimmed the reading and is trying to fake their way through the class discussion. And so, first of all, let's just be clear. It's truly amazing that we've been able to build a tool that can do as well as an undergraduate who has skimmed the reading and is faking their way through the discussion. That's incredible. But it means that it has some things that you can do with it and some things that it probably won't do well. The way I think about it is, as educators, there's sort of six responses that we can have to these new tools. We could ignore it. Mm-hmm. We could ban it. We can try and outfox it. We can teach about it. We can actually teach it, or we can teach with it. I think the first two of those, ignoring it and banning it, are sort of either like, you know, putting your head in the sand and just pretending that something's not there, or worse, trying to stuff everybody else's head in the sand and try and pretend that it's not there. All of the last four are viable options. I think the most exciting one, of course, is to teach with it. Mm-hmm. Right? So outfoxing it is essentially to reconstruct your assignments and the things that you do so that they're things that AI can't do. And an easy way to do that is to ask AI to do the assignments that you've assigned. And if it does a good job, well, then you probably need to fix it. There are some people who are teaching about AI. So they're talking about what the ethical concerns, and there are many of them, of using AI are, how it works, what it can do. There's some people who focus on actually having students build their own AI tools in a subject. And then the last one, which I think is the most exciting, is figuring out ways to incorporate AI into what students are doing. So, for example, have AI write an essay and have students critique it. Have AI give students feedback on an essay and then have them respond to it. Have students have a discussion with AI and then come together and talk about what the AI knew about a topic or didn't know about a topic. And there are teachers who are coming up with more and more creative things to do like that. But that's sort of the range of possibilities that are out there.
And that actually, the last one sounds fascinating to me because I think about it, because so many headlines over the last 9 months, let's say, for when ChatGPT first came out, is all of these jobs now that are the like ChatGPT whisperer type jobs of knowing how to work with this tool, because so many companies are so hungry to be able to leverage it. And so the last option that you just said seems, as far as like teaching with it, is actually the biggest opportunity of not only still teaching critical thinking and the subject at hand while not fighting against this thing that feels kind of inevitable.
Yeah, there's a professor at Harvard's business school who said that ChatGPT isn't going to replace people's jobs. What's going to happen is that people working with AI are going to replace people who are working without AI.
Yeah.
So I think certainly that's the way the future's headed. I do want to caution us a little bit. You know, when the World Wide Web first came out, or when, you know, Google search first came out, which was, by the way, seemed at the time kind of as amazing as ChatGPT does now. I mean, it was like a miracle that you could search everything that was on the web and come back with, you know, something that was pretty close to what you were looking for. There were actually a lot of people who were talking about how important it was going to be to train students to make good search queries, right? And then there was discussion about, like, you know, I was studying, do students have smart search strategies? And it turns out that in the long run, that really wasn't so important. The effects of the internet were different than just that. So I suspect it's going to be a little while before we figure out what were the interesting parts of how students are going to use AI. But yes, I think absolutely working with it is critical.
So I have to imagine, with your background and what you are an expert in, you, I'm going to assume, are more on the excited side of what AI could bring and how it can be incorporated in learning and teaching versus buying into the scariness of it.
Well, sadly, it's a little of both.
Is yes, it a little both?
I'm excited. I'm also a little skeptical. I'm skeptical for a couple of reasons. One is because there really are some important problems that AI is producing. And by that, I don't mean like that we're going to have new AI overlords. I suppose that's a possibility. But I actually think that discussion, those sort of gloom and doom discussions, are blinding us to the more immediate issues, which are things like the fact that AI spews misinformation all the time, yeah, and that it can be used to create things online that are going to, you know, be spamming people or phishing for information, other things. AI is also, like, it has well-known biases. And once you start to use something with biases without actually really focusing on where they came from, how we regulate what material AI uses to train itself and so on, like, that's a huge problem. And not to mention the amount of power that's being used to run AI machines is enormous. The environmental impact is huge. And so we actually also have to think about just the cost benefit trade-offs. I mean, how much energy are we willing to spend to have AI do something for us that probably isn't that much better than we could have done ourselves?
Than we can do ourselves.
So they're real immediate problems. The other thing is, you know, when the internet first came out, people were very excited. This is going to democratize information. It's going to give voice to the voiceless. It will allow people who are geographically distributed and isolated to find like-minded communities. And it turns out, well, what nobody really predicted that what social media was going to do was essentially empower Nazis to organize well and to do all kinds of terrible things. We tend to be very bad about figuring out exactly what's going to come in the future of technology. And so I think, yes, I'm optimistic, but I'm also wary. And I think that's kind of how we should all approach this.
Well, it's fascinating. And I would love to have you back on again, Professor David Williamson Schaefer, to talk more about this, because I have a very thin surface level understanding of it. And so continuing to be able to tap into your knowledge is things progress, because it's developing fast, that's for sure. So thank you so much for spending time with us today. Professor Schaefer is the Sears Bascom Professor of Learning Analytics at UW-Madison. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
From Alexander Field to the Central Business District, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
To As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. Greg Bach is on the board. And calling in on the phone is Civic Media's own sports reporter, Mike Clemens. Mr. Clemens, how are you today?
Pretty good. We got a final practice up here in Green Bay, and then we head to Sweet Home Chicago for the weekend for a huge game, 325 at Soldier Field against the Packers and the Bears.
So the big question, we were talking to J.R. Radcliffe from Journal Sentinel yesterday, and the big question I have for you, Mike, is do you think the Bears will still suck this weekend?
Well, no, you know, they have that tradition. I think that this coach that they've got, Matt Eberflus, is the best hire they've had at coach in quite a while since Lovie Smith was there. I think he's a smart guy. Luke Getsky is his offensive coordinator. Luke was a assistant coach here in Green Bay for many years. And Williams is their defensive coordinator. He was with Eberflus, and when the Colts had a really good defense there for a couple of years, and has also worked for the Lions and the Vikings, so he's very familiar with the division. So, the last regime put all their chips on Mitch Trubisky at quarterback, and he stunk. And then that kind of put them in draft pick hell. So they are rebuilding, and they made a big move this year, Kristen. And last year you saw Justin Fields, who they spent a first-round pick on, just like the Packers did with the Bears. But he had, like, nobody to throw to. And so in the offseason, they made a trade with the Carolina Panthers for a good receiver named DJ Moore. And I think if Justin Fields can settle down and throw a safe pass over the middle or in the screens, DJ Moore is tough. Once he gets the ball in his hands, he's going to be hard to bring down. So they've got that weapon added now on offense.
All right. Well, that's the Bears. So we'll TBD with them. How are you feeling about the Packers? I mean, I think there's a lot of anticipation for this weekend after a couple preseason looks at Jordan Love. But also, is there any update on Watson and Dobbs of whether or not they're going to play?
Dobbs came out and was limited in practice yesterday. So okay. Romeo Dobbs is Jordan Love's main go-to guy through practice and preseason games, his best receiver, most reliable receiver. And just about 2 weeks ago, just before the final preseason game against the Seahawks, they sat him, and we found out it was a hamstring. So he was able to get on the field limited yesterday. But we were shocked when we came in on Wednesday, now Christian Watson, his other top receiver, the two guys from last year that they're really kind of build the team on, he's dealing with a hamstring. I doubt if he'll be able to play. The first thought I had for some reason was kind of a flashback to a game that the Packers had when LaFleur had taken over, and Aaron Rodgers was short on receivers. So they used Aaron Jones and their other running back, Jamal Williams, as some receivers, and they scored touchdowns and had some big plays. So maybe he'll use Aaron Jones, you know, a lot. The other thing is this that we've talked about in the locker room this week is the rivalry. And I understand there's a lot of 22, 23-year-olds that have, you know, Fleck, I said to you, hey, how about that Alabama-LSU rivalry? You know, you and I can't really, you know, relate to that because we don't live down there. But I thought, you know, there's got to be something to it. Now, one thing about it is Justin Fields, the Bears quarterback, is actually pretty close friends with the Packers' new quarterback, Jordan Love. And we asked Jordan Love about that.
Yeah, no, me and Justin, we got the same agent. So we do a good amount of things just with our agent and with our agency getting together. But, no, I haven't talked to him at all this week. Probably talked to him, you know, after the game or maybe before. No, I'm excited for it. It's always exciting to, you know, open the season, get the first game on rolling. But for an NFC opponent, you know, rivalry game, it'll be very exciting playing there in their stadium. So I'm sure it'll be a packed house. Everybody will be excited for week one and ready to put on a show.
Oh, the plot thickens.
Yeah. You know, a lot of guys have been asking the other players in the Packers locker room, it's Jordan Love. Is he going to get nervous, you know, on Sunday? And they go, no. I mean, all through training camp, Jair Alexander and Rasul Douglas are two defensive backs, veterans. They were trash-talking Jordan every day, trying to see if they could get under his skin. And he doesn't rattle. He seems pretty calm and cool. So they've got that in their on their favor. And, you know, you played that clip coming out of the break of that famous play from a couple years ago. Aaron Rodgers scores a touchdown. And then, you know, he said not only the men but the women were flipping him off there in the south end zone. And he started with that, you know, I own you. What are you doing? I own you. And it's true. Matt LaFleur's never lost to the Bears, yet he's 8-0 against them. So I went to Darnell Savage Jr., who's their safety now. He's taken over the back end. And I said, it's got to be, even if you've never been to Chicago or you're not familiar with the Bears-Packers rivalry with this really young Packers team, you've got to pick up on on game day, right? And here's what I said to him.
On game day, when you walk into that stadium, aren't there signs? Then it kicks in, you say, oh.
Yeah, you feel it. I mean, and it's not even necessarily when you walk into the stadium. It's driving to the stadium. You know, it's in the bus, and you see all the people tailgating, that kind of thing. It's a good feeling, though, honestly. It's kind of like a us-against-the-world kind of feeling, you know. And it feels good because it kind of brings us closer together because we know, you know we all we got. You know, we in this big stadium by itself, essentially. Obviously, Packer fans travel very well. We hope to hear some Go Pack Go chants on Sunday. So, but yeah, it's just one of those things, man. It's a special, special, special thing. This Bears Packers kind of thing. So,
when you're down in the field and you get women in the stands flipping off Aaron Rodgers, that's an indication.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. They like I said though, that's the thing about just these two organizations. You know, and just the fan base behind them is so deep and so rooted and so strong, you know. It just goes back to time and time again, you know. So it just makes it all the more better.
All right, Mike, we got 30 seconds left, so we got to wrap it up. But I'm very excited to see this game. We'll have to have you back next week to let us know on-field reporting, what you think, how the game went. But we're so happy to have you there in person. So thanks for joining us today, Mike.
Thanks, Kristen. Appreciate it. Right. Have a good weekend.
So you too. Go Packers. When we come back, Alex Brusen will be here, who is the board president of We Got This, a gardening program that is pretty cool. Stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Locally Grown Radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. News, talk, and sports from Vesper to Plover.
Locally Grown, 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Please join the leadership team from Coldwell Banker Siewert Realtors and tune in to Let's Talk Real Estate. Our next show is coming up and we'll be talking about those things that are important to you, whether you're a buyer or seller. So please tune in on Tuesday afternoons at 3:30, where we'll be highlighting all things real estate.
Coldwell Banker Siewert Realtors is your trusted source for real estate solutions. Tuesday afternoon at 3:30, right here on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR.
What if one day you went to your secret hiding place? You know, that spot that only you know about? And instead of what you came for, you found something a little different. What if instead of your private stash, you found a simple phone number? 1-800-662-HELP. What would you do? Would you stop and give it some thought? Would you make the call? The truth is, all drug use comes with risk. Before those risks become real, before drugs turn your life upside down, before drugs take their toll on you and your family, know that there is help. You can quit. If you or someone you love is struggling with drug use or prescription drug misuse, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, or go to samhsa.gov/thereishelp.
I found hope in the midst of an overwhelming situation.
I let go of trying to control things that I had no control over, and that helped me find peace of mind.
Alcoholism is a disease that can affect any family. Everyone suffers, but there is help and hope at Al-Anon Family Groups.
I was constantly stressed and worried. Now I approach each day with joy and gratitude.
In Al-Anon, families and friends of alcoholics find new ways to heal from the effects of a loved one's drinking.
Al-Anon gave me my life back. I'm a better father and husband.
Are you in an overwhelming situation because of someone else's drinking?
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Local and virtual meetings are available. Maybe one could work for you. For information, call 1-866-200-0033 or visit alanon.org/hope.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it. Navigating without a compass, eyes waiting, started to wonder. Metamorphosis, loss of who you thought you was.
When your kid can't find the language, help them find the lyrics. Listen to the Sound It Out album and get tips and tools to start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver, and we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. My Grandpa Lou is the reason why my dad and I started racing, and I'm really proud to follow in his tracks. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. I've learned a lot on this journey with my Grandpa Lou, and the memories of my grandpa will always be with me. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Talking about Alzheimer's can be really tough. But if you notice something, have a conversation with your loved one. Encourage them to see a doctor or offer to go with them. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. The Alzheimer's Association provides care, support, and research to help you take control of the situation with your family and manage the disease together. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. Visit alz.org/time-to-talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. partly cloudy skies overnight with lows around 47. Easterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Highs around 78. Tomorrow, mainly clear. Chance for scattered thunderstorms. Tomorrow night, 56. Chance for scattered storms. Sunday, chance for scattered rain showers on Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 49.
Like the legend of the Phoenix, all ends with beginnings. What keeps the planet spinning? The force from the beginning.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I'm Kristen Bry. He is Greg Bach. And earlier this week, we got to talk to my colleague, James Causey, who's a veteran journalist and editorial columnist over at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we were talking about his article from last month, talking about how leaders in Milwaukee should probably listen to teenagers and listen to kids as far as some of the their solutions to the problems that plague them. And one of the things he listed was programming, things that keep kids busy, mentors, things like, and so one of the, and actually one of the programs he mentioned is called We Got This, which is a gardening program that's been around for about 10 years in Milwaukee. And we just so happened, that was not planned when he mentioned it when he was on the show, but we had already scheduled the president of the board of We Got This, Alex Bruzan, to be on the show. And here he is. Alex, nice to meet you.
Yeah, good to meet you guys. Good timing.
Good timing, right? And yeah, so right? I think I had learned about you guys because I think earlier, like last month, maybe it was CBS 58 did a piece on you guys. And so without, because you're the expert, so tell us more about what We Got This is.
Yeah, sure. So We Got This was started about, like you said, about 10, 12 years ago by a man named Andre Lee Ellis. And he's famous in Milwaukee, a great community activist. And really what happened was, and a little bit of a backstory about my wife and I, we live around the corner from the We Got This garden.
Okay.
And so one night, it's like a Thursday night, I want to say about 5 o'clock, we heard gunshots kind of back behind the house. Andre at the time had been living just a few houses down, and heard those gunshots, and, a young man lost his life that night. Right around dinner time. And, you know, that's pretty normal for our neighborhood. That happened. In fact, same thing happened literally last night, about 9:30. My wife and I are brushing our teeth and same thing happened. That guy, who was a 17-year-old kid, he's going to make it. But, you know, gun violence is it's a real thing, you know, over by us. It happens. It happens a lot. And so, you know, Andre knew that. And he said, you know, we got to do something about it. And our zip code 53206 has 800 vacant lots currently in it. And so one of those vacant lots is what is now the We Got This community garden. And so he started that garden program, again, like I said, about 12 years ago. And just like any organization, you know, there's a start, but everything kind of has a rolling start. And so we call it 12 years ago. But essentially he built out that garden space and had kids from the neighborhood kind of just walking by and asking to help. And he had the great idea. Well, why don't we pay him? And so, you know, like I said, we're in our like 12th season of paying kids to work in the neighborhood, essentially. So Saturdays in the summertime, this past summer, We Got This had 12 Saturdays where kids could come out. They learned how to garden. They learned how to just kind of take care of the space. All of the plants and most of the building material was donated through a couple other organizations in the area. And so those kids planted, you know, hundreds of plants that were donated. Wow. They maintained all of those plants. And then now, towards the end of the summer, they harvest and then they take them home or give them to the neighborhood.
So I think that's a really important thing to highlight is the fact that, do you feel like part of the reason why this program, because part of the CBS 58 article was that it's so popular that there's actually not even enough work for all the kids who want to be part of it right now, right?
Yeah. So, you know, I like having good problems. I don't have any issue with having good problems. We have a good problem. So the last Saturday of the summer, 106 kids showed up, which meant that, you know, We Got This gave out $2,000 to kids in the neighborhood. You know, for working, we eclipsed 3,000 hours of service to the community with that group of people, you know, kids and even more with the adults. We don't really count that. And 175 different kids had come out over the summer. We've started to build out an additional space kind of down the street. This is super local geographic information, but we live on 8th Street, and on 9th Street was 3 or 4 contiguous lots that, we have a lot of problems in our neighborhood with people dumping trash. And so frequently people would dump on those lots. And so when we started to realize we're running out of space here, we worked with the city to be able to manage those spaces. So we built planter boxes. There's a pumpkin patch, which I think is just really nice. Cool to have a pumpkin patch in the inner city, and a bunch of sunflowers. And we tried out corn this year. So there's a couple rows of corn.
That's awesome.
There. Yeah.
And did that change of just activating the space? Did the community kind of figure it out, like, oh, we can't dump garbage in here anymore?
Yeah. Well, there's, 800 vacant lots. There's a lot of places that you can dump trash. And so this is now just one less space. I'm sure it gets dumped somewhere else, unfortunately. But nobody wants to dump their garbage at a garden. Why would nobody wants to do that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so... So with that though, so there's so many kids who want to be involved, and is it kind of just, there's not official enrollment. It's kind of, if you show up, there's work for you to do.
Yeah. We didn't turn anybody away, this year. And so, you know, we had kids 8, 9, 10, all the way up through, 18, a couple of kids that just graduated high school. And no, I mean, I don't know about you, Kristen, but like a young person that wants to show up and work on a Saturday morning at 8 o'clock, I'm fine with that. We can figure out whatever else we need to do, you know, raise the funds or, by the way, we got this mke.com. I just want to make sure I plug that if you're a listener and you want to donate. That's the easy part. I mean, I've lived in the inner city for the last 17 years, and I believe that there's a stigma around our neighborhood and neighborhoods like ours that people don't want to work. And I just have found that to be entirely not true. I mean, kids are literally getting up early on a Saturday, on a day that they could sleep in, to work. And we work, you know, we don't just sit around and hold hands and play games. We, you know, they're digging holes, we're planting trees, we're tilling up stuff, we're carrying heavy things, we're mowing neighbors' lawns. You know, we're doing all of that kind of yard maintenance type stuff. And they're excited, and they keep coming.
And so I think that's such an important thing to point out, though, is that the fact that I think, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, a key part of this and the key part of the success is that you are paying them, and that it's not just a volunteer program, that it's like, it keeps, I would imagine it keeps them coming back. Cause if it's kids who they're certainly not necessarily getting allowance money. And so it does, there's a work ethic, there's a return on my time. There's a return, like there's a work, like all that gets built into it. Cause I think sometimes you'd think, well, this is gardening, this is supposed to be volunteer hours, but it probably, I would imagine, is a big part of it is the fact that they walk away after 4 hours with $20.
Yeah, Kristen, I had a neighbor growing up named Mrs. Gallagher, and she was an old lady that couldn't cut her grass. She had a couple of knee replacements, and so she couldn't cut her grass, right? And so I knew when I was 12, okay, I can go over to Mrs. Gallagher's and I can cut her grass, and she's going to hand me $10. And so like that was my first job. That was the first thing that I did. And so, I mean, yeah, like we opened the garden up last weekend and we had 35 kids show up just to volunteer. But there is something really valuable about putting dollars into a kid's hand, and then they get to decide what they do with it. Whether it's go to the corner store right after and buy a bag of chips, which actually surprisingly doesn't happen very often. Mm-hmm. A lot of the times they say like, I'm saving up for clothes for school, or there's a pair of shoes that I want to buy. And it's nothing ridiculous. It's like, I got a $40 pair of shoes I want to buy for the first day of school. Like, okay, well that's great. And, you know, and now you have an opportunity to do that. And nobody just handed it to you. Cause like I said, I mean, those kids, they work hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And is there something specific with gardening that you think is it because of, I've talked about this in the show for a month. This is my first year gardening as a homeowner. And so I've had, my mom has been teaching me the craft, and it does there. It's meditative, but it also is when you're getting over there and you're weeding and it's hard work. And so you think there's something specific to the work of gardening that is also key to why the kids enjoy it. This is kind of work that they get out of their own head. Is there something therapeutic about it?
Yeah, it's that. But then I worked in schools for a long time. And I know, a couple of things. Like, you have to keep kids busy in order for all hell not to break loose. So you have to keep them busy. But that being said, like, you have to give kids something that they can do that's accessible. Like, I taught math for forever. And if you give a kid a ridiculously hard math problem, they're going to sit there and then they're going to find a way to do something that they shouldn't do. But gardening has access points from, what you're finding out, somebody has no experience up to, the 75-year-old lady that comes and volunteers who has 50 years of experience. Yeah. And so, it's easily accessible for a kid. Everybody can carry a watering can. Everybody can say, that's a weed, that's a strawberry plant. Those are the types of things that make it easy. But then, there's a lot of other, really positive aspects to gardening. You see the literal fruits of your labor, or the vegetables of your labor. You see that, like, right away. Like, you can plant flowers on the first Saturday in June. And then you can pick those flowers in August and then give them to your mom. So you have, like, this connection to the space. I don't have the statistic in front of me, and I wish I did, but I think the home ownership rate in our zip code is like 33%. It's about that. And so there's a real lack of ownership in our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And those kids own that space. They take care of that space. And so when you can give a young person this idea that, ownership is well within the possibilities for you, and in fact, here's a space that you own and manage, that does a lot to a kid, and they thrive off of that.
Absolutely. We're talking to Alex Bruzan, who is the board president of We Got This, which is a program in Milwaukee dedicated to having young people work in a community garden. And so I guess that's going back. So is it mostly vegetables, or like, what? So I heard sunflowers, I heard corn, I heard strawberries. So what is the range of things being grown?
Yeah, and my wife is the gardening. I actually can't tell the difference between weeds and strawberries, but many of the 9-year-olds can. We've got some great partnerships already. There's in Waukesha, the city of Waukesha, there's a Walmart that's kind of partnered with us, and they gave us two literal giant. I'm holding my hands up. Listeners can't see, but I don't know, 2x4x3 boxes of seeds. And so we literally can plant, we had everything. So, like I said, yeah, pumpkins, a lot of vegetables, a lot of tomatoes, a lot of cucumbers, a lot of things that are easy to grow, but then several boxes that are dedicated to flowers that, you can cut. There's the one of the reasons behind that too is, 5 through 206, the median household income is $24,000 a year, and it's really hard to live on $2,000. Yeah. And so if you can produce anything that's going to create margin, that matters. Any little bit that you can do. So if a kid walks home with, the equivalent of a grocery bag full of vegetables, like, that matters. That makes, that can and does make a difference.
So I guess kind of going back to the conversation we had with James earlier this week, as someone who sounds like has spent your career working with youth and working with kids and working in the inner city, what do you think that our officials and our leaders should be listening and actually taking into account from what you hear from young people?
Yeah, I think I'm big into design thinking. So in the long scope or in the 5-10 year plan that we got this, we'd love to have many other gardens, because I think that model is repeatable and it's fairly efficient financially. But I think it's the themes that you're going to hear from the kids. They want purpose. They want pride. They want that sense of ownership. They want a place where they can go and feel like they're a part of something. We had spaces in my neighborhood growing up. My wife's from Middleton, Wisconsin. I'm from a town called Lake in the Hills. We had places that we could go, and those places don't exist in my neighborhood. Yeah. They just don't. And so we need things like that. It doesn't need to be 30 We Got This gardens. That would be great. But we need, other places where a kid can go, where they can feel like they belong, where they can get a sense of purpose, a sense of pride, learn some skills, learn how to resolve conflicts. That was huge. As you start to get up close to 100 kids, you're going to have conflict. Yeah. And you need some safe spaces to learn how to manage conflict.
All right. Well, tell everyone where they can find more information, but more importantly, donate.
Yeah, sure. Two things. You can go to WeGotThisMKE.com or Facebook, WeGotThisMKE. Also, my wife and I do a podcast. It's called the 53206 Cast, where we kind of like talk about all things inner city. But specifically about We Got This, several episodes are just about that. So 53206cast, and get on Spotify and get it on whatever you get to podcast.
Perfect. We will link all of that to our show notes today. Alex Bruzin, so nice to meet you. Have a great weekend. And this is awesome. It's such a great program. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Thanks, Kristen. Appreciate it.
All right. We have one more segment, so stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. Locally grown radio is 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. He is Greg Bach. And Greg Bach, it's been so fun to have you on the board with me for the last 2.5 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. Jane will be back on Monday, but oh then gosh. you will be back on the board as of September 25th mm-hmm. when Jane takes over for me as I take care of baby. So how are you feeling? What have you learned over the last 2.5 weeks?
I have learned to being dead serious, like when I sit, if you're watching the live stream, you can see where I'm sitting. Sit at the board, have almost like a 180 visual of everything I'm doing, and keep calm the entire time. So like
All right.
on my left, there's the phone line. In front of me, I got you, I got the board, I got music, callers. On my right, I got text messages, and making sure that, and always keeping my eye on the clock.
Very important.
And so, clock. So like the first couple of days, there were days where we had like big engagement, and I'm like, oh my God. And it's just like, and then I'm like, that's not going to do well. Relax, have fun. I got you next to me, so this is great.
It is great.
We're just being the ball. Just be the ball, man.
Be water, as Bruce Lee used to say.
Oh, even better. Be water. Hydrate,
well,
people.
I am a bum, so I'm out of town this weekend. I'm going, like I said, going up to Wisconsin Rapids. But we've been playing ads for this. Yeah. I've heard on the commercials, but this sounds awesome. So Joy Engine is doing Milwaukee's first ever outdoor immersive arts and light festival experience. And so it's tonight from 5 until 10:30. It's also tomorrow from 5 until 10:30 on 7th and Historic Mitchell Street in Milwaukee, and it's basically like, it sounds like there's like, it's like 4D projection mapping. I don't even know what 4D is, but it's like mapping technology to Milwaukee's like the historic. So if you haven't been in Milwaukee, but like the historic Mitchell Street neighborhood is, I think there was like a big shopping neighborhood, and it's beautiful down there. But it's a multi-story building at 710 West Historic Mitchell Street, home of Mitchell Street Arts. And so that's going to serve as the backdrop for the show. But it sounds, I'm going to post more of this to our show notes today, but it's basically like performances and celebrating like technology and music. And it sounds really cool. And the lineups of the different artists sounds awesome. So I would say if you are in the Milwaukee area this weekend,
yeah,
check it out either tonight or tomorrow night. I know you're going to be busy as well because you have shows.
I do have shows this weekend. And I think they also made sure to say in the commercial that it's family friendly.
Yes.
Everyone can go. So I'm actually going to suggest it to my friends and my niece and nephew to go.
So, yeah, because there's some of the activities include there's a life-sized Light Bright, which sounds awesome.
Wait, what time is this happening? I'm going.
So basically, like, and I'm seeing some of the pictures. And, you know, like Light Bright was just a little panel when you had it as a kid, but at least the pictures they have, like, it is massive. It is a big board that you can go create designs on.
Oh, that's so
and
cool.
Then PNC Bank has a kids area that's going to be like multilingual learning, and there's like a variety of different hands-on activities over there. And then in Mitchell Street Arts, you're going to be able to go into the building and explore their headquarters, and there's going to be art activities and tours of the space. So this sounds like, I'm really sad that I'm missing this. And so I hope people go and let me know how it is.
Hopefully, you know what? they'll do it next year, and you can hold the hand of your little kid, and they can run around. And
will they be running around? I guess in a year.
Yeah,
at a year they should, start walking.
They should.
Hopefully,
they usually. I mean, most kids that I know are walking around 8-9 months.
Really?
I think so.
Is it that early?
I thought so.
I thought they're like crawling at 8-9 months. I have no idea when the milestones are supposed to be.
Please direct all text messages to Luke Mather at Civic Media.
Luke definitely knows the child development stages. Yeah. If there's anyone at this company that knows it, it's totally Luke.
because I remember my niece Molly walking and talking at almost at the same time. She was
really?
Talking. She started talking real young, and then she showed her up. But like, yeah. So I remember her like starting to say words before a year, like little words, tiny words.
Interesting.
But she was walking. I
actually had a funny word. Our niece Maddie, who's 6 years old, I guess her feedback from her teacher in her first week of school was to her mom said, "Boy, she can talk a lot." And I took offense to that because my sister-in-law put that in our family text, and she said that was the feedback. And I immediately shot back. As someone who was also told I talk too much in class, I was like, well, for what it's worth, I also was given that feedback as a child, and now I get paid to talk for a living. So maybe it's not such a bad thing. Let her talk.
And that was a 45-second answer right there. It's really weird off the topic. Speaking of like reports, I was going through my car and just found a bag of shreddables. And in those shreddables, all my high school report cards.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know how it just didn't happen, but I looked at it. And I'm like, should I keep them? And then I saw like the D in science. I'm like, nope, they're gone.
Oh, you got a D in science?
I wasn't a good student in the first 2 years of my high school career.
I feel like there's a lot to dig into there with less than 3 minutes left for the show.
Yeah.
But was it because you didn't apply yourself or because you didn't care? Like, what do you, looking back at it?
I cared. I just didn't. I didn't apply myself correctly.
Interesting.
Know. And to this, I mean, I think very much education is a custom-made thing. You got to figure out how you learn, and then you learn. You know, I grew up, and we still do grow up in the time of take information in, memorize it, regurgitate it. Take it, memorize it, regurgitate. That's not how everybody learns. So it was hard for me to do that. So, you know, don't have learning disabilities or anything like, no dyslexia or anything like that, but it is difficult for me to like read technical information and take the information in.
It's always interesting to like aptitude for like math and science versus language and social studies. I was certainly a language and social studies kid, but I feel like, is that just the missing piece sometimes for kids? Is it, it's that you maybe have a stronger inclination for one or the other, but if it's like just having the right teacher who helps you learn how to do the other thing, like how much of like exactly what you said, it's like, it's not that I can't learn this. It's just, I'm not like absorbing it in the way that you want me to.
I remember, honestly, I'll dig into this and we can talk about it further, but I feel like I remember seeing an article saying, stop saying you're bad at math. Because people say that all the time, like, I'm bad at math. Well, you're not. You just didn't learn correctly how to do math for you. And so, yeah, I'd love to. I could talk about that and find a guest and do the whole, like, I love that topic. So.
All right, add it to the repository of future topics.
Yep.
Greg Bach. All right, well, Greg, this has been so fun doing this show with you for 2.5 weeks. We're so excited to have Jane back on Monday. I will not be here Monday. Joe Zepecki is filling in, so... always a joy to have Joe's insight. Maybe he will have an impeachment update, and I'm sure Joe will have lots of opinions on that. But thank you to Alex Bruzan. Thank you to Professor Schaefer. Thank you to Luke Mathers. Thank you, Greg Bach. Thank you to everyone who filled, texted in, called in. It was a great show. Great Friday.
It was very fun. Very popping, effervescent.
All right. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
This has been As Goes Wisconsin.
What's up, y'all? I'm Kelly Clarkson, and as the daughter of a school teacher, I know just how important education is. No matter how old you are or your situation, continuing to learn will enrich your life and help remove barriers you didn't even know were there. So much opportunity, y'all. Whether it's a foreign language, history, or a different way to look at things, take some time each day to learn something new. This message is courtesy of the United States Air Force.
How do you locate a support group, professional association, or local organization? United Way's 211 will provide the answers to these questions and more. 211 is your connection to programs and services in Central Wisconsin. Dial 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. In this ever-changing world, it is often hard to find the program or service you're looking for. United Way's 211 can assist you locating services. 211 is free and confidential. Trained referral specialists will help you get connected 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211. Every day, people begin a difficult and sometimes desperate search for programs that can provide assistance. United Way's 211 is there to connect you to the programs and services you need. For non-emergency information and referral services, call United Way's 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211. With thousands of programs in the database, they can assist you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things that people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
Hey, Dad, your prescription will be ready in just a minute. Hey, Dad, your laundry will be ready in just a minute. Dad, your lunch will be ready in just a minute.
Hey, honey, why don't you take a minute?
When you help care for a loved one, you give them as much time as you can, making sure they're safe and comfortable. But it's just as important that you take some time for yourself. At AARP, we can help with information and useful tips on how you can maintain a healthy life balance, care for your own physical and mental well-being, and manage the challenges of caring for a loved one. Because the better care you take of yourself, the better care you can provide for your loved one.
Thanks, Dad.
Thank you. You're there for them. We're here for you. Find free care guides to support you and your loved one at aarp.org/caregiving. That's aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
From Lake Wazeecha and beyond, your news, talk, and sports is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Tom Foti in Washington. More than 630 people are confirmed dead in Morocco. More than 300 others also known hurt. There's been damage to historic structures in the famed city of Marrakesh.
Following a 6.8 magnitude earthquake, its epicenter was a sparsely populated region in the Atlas Mountains, where there are few towns and many settlements are remote and hard to access. Many residents of the biggest nearby city, Marrakesh, fled their homes as the quake struck.
That is the BBC's Gareth Barlow. On the weather watch back here, continuing stifling heat in the southwest and worry about a very powerful storm in the Atlantic. First, about that storm, Chris Warren at the Weather Channel.
Hurricane Lee rapidly intensified to a Category 5 hurricane. Rapid intensification is a 35 mile per hour increase in winds in 24 hours. Lee did 80, more than doubled that threshold in 24 hours. It is now a Category 4 hurricane, which is expected to be the strength over the next several days.
When it is expected to send dangerous currents ashore along the U.S. East Coast and the Caribbean, even though it is not expected to make actual landfall. Now, the heat, the worst of it remains in Texas. Triple-digit temperatures have been the norm there in much of the state. They still are. Northern states are starting to see some heat relief. A federal judge refuses to let a former high-level Trump White House official move his election-related criminal case from state to federal court.
Mark Meadows argued his actions in Georgia were taken as part of his role as chief of staff. Legal analyst Lori Levinson says the judge disagreed.
As Judge Jones wrote, engaging in political activities actually exceeds the outer limits of what the office of White House chief of staff should be doing. And therefore, he had no right to move his case to federal court.
By moving the case to federal court, Meadows might have had a better chance of getting the case dismissed. And if it was not dismissed, coverage would have been different since cameras would not be allowed inside. Linda Kenyon, CBS News.
A former Philadelphia officer is formally charged in a fatal police shooting this month. Philadelphia's DA accusing ex-officer Mark Dial of murder for fatally shooting Eddie Irizarry.